Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudet. Our next guest has been praised by the likes of Oprah, Malcolm Gladwell, and Brené Brown. And today, we're lucky enough to have author Daniel Pink joining us to talk about his latest book. It's called The Power of Regret: How Looking Back Moves Us Forward. Daniel, it's really good to have you on the program.
Gemma, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be with you.
So let's just start with what you call the myth of this no regrets philosophy of life. I think it's a mantra that a lot of people have.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think we've been sold a bill of goods. We've been told that we shouldn't look backward, that we shouldn't have regrets, that regrets make us weak, when in fact, the massive amount of evidence from my own research and from 50 years of science tells us that everybody has regrets. Every single person has regrets, and that if we treat them right, regrets can make us stronger rather than weaker, can make us more productive and more happy rather than less productive and less happy.
So let's dig into that a little bit, because as you mentioned, your book, you really drew on research in multiple disciplines, but then as you mentioned, you've undertaken two research projects on regret. And I'm curious to know what this research shows. I mean, are we talking about like big major regrets or like, I mean, I think about like, look, I have kids. I regret every single day, not regret having the children, but regret losing my temper, regret being, you know, every day I wish I were a better mom.
Yeah. Well, that's a great way to think about it. So here's what we know. So the truth of the matter is that everybody has regrets. Every single person has regrets. So the idea that anybody doesn't have regrets is nonsense. The only people without regrets are 5-year-olds, people with brain damage, and sociopaths. Everybody else has regrets. Now regrets make us feel bad, right? They don't feel good, right? So if everybody has them and they make us feel bad, they have to have some purpose, right? And the purpose is clear as a bell. Regrets, a huge amount of research and science tells us, can make us better. If we treat them properly, okay, not ignore them, not wallow in them, they can help us make better decisions. They can enhance our performance on things like negotiation and on strategy. They can deepen our sense of meaning. The problem is that we haven't been taught how to deal with them effectively. And so we think that, what happens is that we end up either ignoring our regrets or wallowing in them, and neither one of those is useful.
Okay, so then let's talk about some of these things, because in the book you talk about, reckoning with our regrets, right? And one thing you do is you say that could sharpen our decision making. So can we talk about what you mean about that?
Sure. So some great research in negotiation. Okay. Let's say you're in a negotiation and it doesn't go that well. And you're like, you could say, and you regret that maybe you didn't make a first offer, or maybe that you did make a first offer, or you didn't make a high enough offer. Right. You could say, oh, no regrets, no regrets. It's all good. It's all going to work. You know, no regrets, no need to look back. Or what these researchers have found, that if you actually say, okay, let me look at that negotiation and think about what I regret. What did I regret doing? And when we think about our regrets, we feel bad. But regret as an emotion is also instructive. It's clarifying. And they found that when people think about their regrets and actually lean into those regrets in subsequent negotiations, they do a lot better. Same thing was true with various kinds of problem-solving exercises. There's some really, really interesting research at a broader level showing that people who have near-miss career regrets and actually think about them and try to learn lessons from them end up outperforming their peers in the future. And so the trouble here is that because regret is negative, we want to avoid it. But regret is also instructive. And the problem is you can't have the instruction without a little bit of the pain. And no one has ever taught us how to deal with that pain. No one has ever taught us how to look at our regrets, draw lessons from them to improve our future behavior.
You know, I think that's really interesting, because I think about certain, you know, career decisions and choices in my life. And one being leaving a very large market to come back to Boise. There is a regret that I have in the sense of, wow, if I had stayed, what would have happened? But not a regret in the choice that I made, because I love where my life is. But I do believe I am in a better place professionally, you know, but I'm not making as much money, right?
Okay.
So does that make sense? I mean, so I think regret is something that we hold, but it's almost like we're ashamed of talking about it.
Well, that's a hugely important point. That's a hugely important point, because when we feel regret, we think that maybe there's something wrong with us because we've been told, oh, you should be think positive all the time. And we think mm-hmm. that we're the only ones because too many people hold their regrets too close to the chest. The better, what I'm trying to do here in this research is normalize this concept of regret. And the thing is, it's already normal. You know, this is, if you look at the research, regret is the most common negative emotion that people experience. It is the second most common emotion that they experience, that they talk about overall, second only behind love. And so it's 50 years of research distills into two pretty simple propositions. One is that regret makes us human. Human beings have regrets. And two, done right, regret can make us better. What's more is that when we actually analyze people's regrets, we end up learning about what they actually value in life.
And you say in the book that there are four core human regrets. So I'd like to talk about each of them quickly. So what is foundation regret?
Right. Well, I went out and collected 16,000 regrets from people in 105 countries, this incredible trove of regrets. And what I found is that over and over again, people regretted the same four things. So one is exactly, as you say, Jem, is foundation regrets. Those are regrets that say, if only I'd done the work. These are people who regret not working hard enough in school, people who regret not saving money, people who regret not taking care of their health. Small little micro decisions that accumulate into bad consequences later on.
And then you have what's called boldness regret.
Oh, big category. These are people who regret not traveling, people who regret not starting a business, people who regret not asking somebody out on a date, people who regret not speaking up in important circumstances. Boldness regrets are, if only I'd taken the chance. You're at a juncture, you can play it safe or you can take the chance. People who don't take the chance often regret it. And many people who take the chance and it doesn't work out, they actually have far fewer regrets than people who never took the chance in the first place.
Well, I've always said the worst thing that somebody can say to you is no, right?
Of course. Well, I mean, that's like that's just a huge life lesson there too. But on these romantic regrets about boldness, you know, not asking somebody out on a date, there are literally hundreds. I have hundreds of these. Where there's somebody who that the person liked, they wanted to ask them out, and they chickened out and didn't do it, and 10 years later, 20 years later, even 30 years later, they regret it. So, I mean, I guess it's a good message for Valentine's Day is ask them out. That's the lesson.
Exactly.
The lesson from 16,000, honestly, the lesson from 16,000 regrets on Valentine's Day is ask them out.
I love that. Okay, so then there's number three is moral regret.
Right. These are really interesting. These are when, again, you're at a juncture, you can do the right thing or you can do the wrong thing. And you do the wrong thing and you regret it. So I've got lots of regrets about people bullying kids in school years ago. Mm. I've got lots of regrets about marital infidelity, other kinds of moral breaches. And I think what's interesting about that is, I'm sort of heartening about that, is that people make these moral missteps and it still bugs them years and years later. I kind of like that. To me, it suggests that people want to be good.
And then there's the fourth one, and that's connection regret.
Right. Those are relationships that were intact or should have been intact. And not only romantic relationships, relationships of all kinds with our parents, with our kids, with our siblings, with our other relatives, with our friends. Oh, my gosh. So many relationships about friendships that had, so many regrets about friendships that had drifted apart. And basically with connection regrets, this relationship comes apart, usually in undramatic ways, and somebody says, oh, I should reach out, but they don't reach out because they think, oh, it's going to be awkward and the other side's not going to care, and they're wrong. And so they drift further apart. And together, you know, these four core regrets to me operate as a photographic negative of the good life. If we understand these chorus of 16,000 people who are telling me what they regret the most are also telling me what they value the most. And what do we value in life? Some stability, that's foundation. We want to do something in our limited time here to learn and grow and lead psychologically rich lives. We want to do the right thing, and we want love and connection. And so in this weird way, this negative emotion of regret takes us to what people around the world are saying constitutes a life well lived.
Mm-hmm. And so then, you know, how do we transform this regret? And I ask that, I mean, because I think, you know, if you hold this regret for years, I mean, on your deathbed, you may regret, right? But I mean, I think about like my, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Tell me what regret you were going to mention.
Well, I was going to say, like, I mean, I have a 10-year-old and, you know, he'll lose his temper sometimes or he'll do something. And then, I mean, he always says, he goes, I regret, like, I regret, you know, I regret getting mad at you, Mom. I regret getting mad at my brother. And, you know, when we have these conversations where I'm like, it's, you know, it's okay to feel that way. You know, it's sure. Okay. What did you learn from it? Like, what did you learn from it? What could you do differently next time? Right. I mean, he still gets mad, but I mean, I'm hoping that that my husband and I are putting a foundation of like, it's okay to have regret, just learn from it.
Exactly. Well, we don't teach people, you know, kids and this is one reason we don't teach people how to deal with negative emotions well enough. As I said before, we're feeding them a bill of goods that they should be positive all the time. And human beings are not positive all the time. We feel negative emotions a lot. And that's part of life, and they can be helpful. We just have to know how to deal with them. And, you know, one step in dealing with negative emotions is really just to normalize them. I've been very taken by the research in what's called self-compassion, where when we feel a negative emotion, like regret, we treat ourselves with kindness rather than contempt. We recognize that everybody has regrets, and we recognize that if we have a regret about, say, making a wrong decision years ago, that represents only one moment in our life. It doesn't fully define our lives. So self-compassion is a really important step. And the other thing that's another thing that's hugely important, and I think it's evidence with your son, is that we should talk about our regrets. We should disclose our regrets. I mean, there's a reason with almost no publicity or attention or marketing, 16,000 people from around the world decided to tell me their regrets because we want to talk about them. And when we disclose our regrets, we unburden ourselves. When we talk about our regrets or even write about them privately, we convert this kind of nasty stomach churning feeling that's kind of amorphous and abstract into concrete words that are far less fearsome, and it helps us make sense of them. And then the final thing we should do is extract a lesson from them. And what we want to do is we want to distance ourselves. So ask ourselves, you know, if your best friend was dealing with this regret, what would you tell them to do? If you are, you know, future Gemma is looking back on this decision right now, 10 years from now, what does she want you to do? So this process of looking inward and treating ourselves with self-compassion, expressing outward through self-disclosure, and then actually trying to extract a lesson through self-distancing is how we should deal with our most prevalent negative emotion, regret, but also negative emotions of all kind. Because if we deal with our negative emotions well, we become stronger.
And I think you're so right that this idea of self-compassion, it seems so simple, but I don't believe it is something that most people were ever taught is to give yourself grace. And
yes,
and we need to do a better job of that, because you can't get to the other side of regret and learn from it if you can't give yourself space and the grace and the compassion to get to that other side.
Absolutely right. And the thing is, the way that we talk to ourselves in moments of not only crisis, but when we make mistakes, when we have screw-ups, when we have failures, when we have flubs, the way that we talk to ourselves is absurd. It's so cruel. It's so harsh. We would never talk to anybody that way. And yet that's how we talk to ourselves. And so, you know, it's like that old joke. You go into the doctor's office and you tell the doctor, it hurts when I do this. And the doctor says, don't do that. You know, so we should do that. We should treat ourselves with kindness rather than contempt. And the other thing is, like, we have this notion, I mean, again, not to maybe to put a few tinctures of tough love here, is that we have this notion that we're somehow more special and unique than we really are. You know, I have regrets about kindness. I have some regrets about boldness. I'm not the only one who has that. That's perfectly normal. It's part of the human experience. And so the more we can normalize things through self-compassion, that allows us to make sense of them through language and then extract lessons from them to guide our future behavior.
Well, I love this so much. And I think that we need more of it in the world. So I appreciate your time and talking with us about this.
Thank you so much for having me. I've enjoyed it.
Absolutely. We've been talking with Daniel Pink. He is the author of the new book, The Power of Regret, How Looking Back Moves Us Forward. It is available now. And I want to thank all of you for joining us as well on this kind of gloomy Tuesday afternoon. Anyway, big thanks to our senior producer, Samantha Wright. And remember, if you have questions or comments, email us, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. I'm Gemma Gaudette. Hope you have a good rest of your day, and we'll see you back here tomorrow.